I shared in our Wellspring Wednesday a couple weeks ago that I recently had to make a call to the IRS helpline. After being on hold for 45 minutes, I finally got a live human voice and explained my question. After probing a bit, she announced, "I'm going to connect you with the Department of Complicated Individual Issues." So I stifled laughter, grabbed a pen, wrote it down. The Department of Complicated Individual Issues. I really like that name. So it turns out that my problem was actually quite quickly resolved, and I was tempted to say then, well, I have some other complicated individual issues, and as long as I have you on the line. So we all have complicated individual issues. We could really use a help desk to call about those. The reality is that there is so much complication in being a human being. Our bodies, our personalities, our minds, our experiences, our understandings, all of these are enormously complicated. We are all constantly evolving. We are works in progress. We don't live in a black and white world. We don't live in a world where everything is clear, where the ground is always firm beneath your feet. We live in a world with an extraordinary diversity of human beings and even more diversity in the natural world around us. One size fits all just does not work in our world for individuals, for nature, for anything. We are all unique. We are all complicated. Life is complicated. Enforced social conformity is based on the fallacy that we are all alike, or at least that we all should be alike. Uniformity, easy black and white choices, this is what underlies the desire for social conformity. Social conformity tries to simplify this complexity of human life, and it tells us that we should suppress who we really are if who we are feels different out of the mainstream. If we are different, and all of us is different in one way or another, social conformity proclaims that we should pretend to be something other than who we really are. One of the tricks up the sleeve of enforced social conformity is giving us two narrow, mutually exclusive options to label ourselves. Either label's okay, but anything outside of the two black and white labels, not acceptable. So it's an either-or question. And there are only two correct answers. This is binary thinking. So, are you either a liberal or a conservative? Are you a Democrat or a Republican? In recent decades, we Unitarian Universalists have done our own formulation that has actually three choices. Either theologically you're a humanist, a Christian, or a theist. What are you? I've been asked countless times by other Unitarian Universalists. What are you? Humanist? Christian? Theist? Much to my dismay, answering, well, I'm kind of an interesting hybrid of the three, is not always very well received. This is utopia, the kind of utopia thinking from Jamborska's poem. Everything is clear, everything is black and white. Gender identity, my main focus today, is another example of binary thinking when it is conceived of as an absolutely black and white equation. Are you male or female? Convention says there are only two possible options to answer that question. What's more, our society has stipulated that the correct answer is whatever biological sex you were assigned at birth. But human life, as it turns out, is much more complex than this either-or question. First of all, not everybody is born with clear-cut genitalia. 1 in 100 babies have bodies that differ from the standard male or female body. 1 in 1,000 have ambiguous genitalia. Helen Boyd writes about 8 categories that are used to determine a child's sex. They usually line up, but not always. The not always folks add up to a fair number of people. So this question of which sex a person is at birth is more complicated than it appears. There's a lot more variance in humanity than this either-or question allows. And then, we superimpose gender onto the equation. Gender adds role and identity into the mix. Role and identity characteristics associated with each sex are not necessarily inherent, but are rather cultural constructs. And they don't always fit a person, even if the physical characteristics match the sex assigned at birth. So for some people, the gender they are assigned at birth feels like it's the wrong gender. They feel like they don't match their assigned gender. Some others feel like they are neither gender, or both genders, or some hybrid of the two. And some just aren't sure whether they're male or female or something else. All of these folks who don't experience gender as this black and white, you are 100% what you are assigned at birth, are gender nonconformists. And they're not nonconformists by choice, simply in being who they are, in owning their own unique identity. They are nonconforming. And then, all too often, marginalization, ostracism, ridicule, and sometimes even violence goes with the territory. While some societies through history have been much more tolerant of gender variance, our society has traditionally gone to extraordinary lengths to enforce gender conformity. The cultural assumptions that go along with assigned gender identity in this society are pervasive and persistent, and they go back to the beginning of every child's life, starting with the color of the blankets and clothing to distinguish infant boys from girls since most newborns look androgynous. Those who feel dissonance between their assigned gender and their real selves often report feeling this dissonance very early in life. Imagine being a girl, age 4, and realizing that really you feel more like a boy. Or imagine being a boy at age 4 and realizing you really feel more like a girl. In this society, this would be a very challenging thing to realize, given this relentless reinforcement of these traditional gender understandings. It is really important to understand that gender identity is not the same thing as sexual orientation. Sexual orientation has to do with whether you're attracted to males or females, or both or neither. Sexual identity is your self-identification about whom you're attracted to. That's different from gender identity. The umbrella term for folks who consider themselves different or opposite from the sex they are assigned at birth is transgender. Other terms embraced by some trans people include gender nonconforming and gender queer. Many transgender folks prefer the simple label trans. Transgender includes many distinctive subcategories, such as transsexuals or crossdressers, and some folks in these subcategories don't embrace the wider term transgender. Some transgender people seek surgery and or hormone therapy to correct their sex so it fits their identity. Others don't, some because they can't afford such procedures, others because they simply don't want them. So the bottom line with all this is transgender is a huge category with a ton of variety. All too often it gets reduced to one overly sexualized stereotype. Hatred and fear are often grounded in the reduction of a category of people to a stereotype. Ignorance always seems to be the handmaiden of hatred and fear. But the truth is, just as one size fits all doesn't fit general humanity, it also doesn't work with transgender folks. Trans people are like snowflakes, Mother Flawless Sabrina says. There's no one way to be trans, Jameson Green writes. Everyone is unique. Seeking to become who you really are in terms of gender identity is really important to a trans person. But it's not the only aspect that's important in their lives. Jameson Green notes that his being transsexual is not the most important thing about him. And it's helpful to remember that, actually, everybody has a gender identity. Who we are in terms of gender is an important question for everyone. Having an identity that conforms to the societal norm generally takes less energy and focus, but it's not like those in that category have no gender or that it doesn't matter to them. Today, as I talk about transgender, I want to acknowledge and I want to honor the fact that there are people who identify as transgender in our fellowship. There are people in our fellowship who are family members of transgender folks. This sermon is not about other people. It is about some of us in this room today. And it's also important to say that whether someone identifies as trans or not is not always visible or widely known. So what causes someone to be transgender? Well, I do not see this as a psychological disorder. Gender identity disorder is currently included in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. I fully expect the gender identity disorder will go the way of labeling homosexuality as a psychological disorder. In other words, it'll be out of that at some point. So what causes transgender? It seems to be that there isn't any one explanation. Helen Boyd writes about the film Ma Vie en Rose, in which God or fate sprinkles transgender dust on babies, and this determines to the extent to which a baby is transgender. The current research, she dryly concludes, is not dissimilar. One person I talked to about what causes transgender observed that transgender is one of the umpteen results of the mind-boggling complexity and variability of nature. The cause of transgender is being alive in a biologically incredibly complex and diverse planet. Ultimately, I don't actually care what causes transgender. I'm much more interested in figuring out ways that I can be helpful to people being who they really are, and in ways that I and we can help work against oppression and violence against trans people. So, what can the fellowship do to become deeply and pervasively welcoming of trans people? First of all, we can make this a community where it's okay in terms of gender identity to be fluid, to question it, to be non-conforming. Helen writes that having only two boxes in which to place the numerous traits and habits and sensibilities and type of bodies restricts who we allow ourselves to be. We need to be a community that doesn't restrict who we are allowed to be. And this work, to me, begins with the children of our fellowship community. The process of suppressing a person's gender identity when it is non-conforming begins in childhood, amidst all the boys play with trucks, girls play with dolls assumptions. Within these walls, and beyond these walls, in homes and schools and other public places where our children hang out, I think we need to encourage children to play with what they want to play, to be who they want to be. We can undermine gender conformity in the way we raise our kids. We can make the fellowship a community where people are encouraged to ask this question, who am I, with openness and with imagination, rather than a place that reinforces the straitjacket of conforming answers. We can be a community where shame about being non-conforming and where encouraging people to fake who they are, where those things are banished forever. The best way to answer this question, who am I, is to answer it in a way which is real and authentic to who we are. Nothing is more basic or important in the spiritual journey. We can make the fellowship a community in which self-acceptance and responsibility are paired. As Unitarian Universalists, we affirm a free and responsible search. So this is not an anything goes place. It's a place where we're given the freedom to define who we are and what we believe, and then we're charged to live in ways congruent with that self-understanding and those beliefs, and also in ways that minimize harm to other people. This is really the whole premise of our sexuality program for our teens, our whole lives, or the OWLS program, as we call it. And I'm really happy to report that OWLS has been updated to present transgender information in the same open and thorough way it presents other information. OWLS encourages freedom and self-responsibility and acceptance. All these are brought together. We can work as a congregation to stop violence and other oppression against trans people. And our society clearly has a problem here. In 2010, some 320 transgender or people suspected of being transgender were murdered in the United States. Of course, there are many, many more incidents of violence than that each year that don't result in death. Being perceived to be transgender is dangerous in this society. Furthermore, absent self and community acceptance, being transgender can also lead to self-inflicted violence. In a recent study, 41% of trans people reported that they have attempted suicide. So we have work to do. We have work to do in our society to stop violence and other oppression against trans people. The fellowship can be part of a movement that says no. We are not going to tolerate that violence anymore. We can begin by being a place where trans lives are recognized. Part of what keeps this violence going is that it is so often hidden by our society's refusal to recognize the existence of trans lives. As a fellowship, we can do little but significant things to express to trans people that we are a welcoming community. This is part of why the signage on our restrooms indicates to trans people that they're welcome to use whatever bathroom feels comfortable to them. This seems like a little thing, but it's really a pretty big thing. Figuring out which bathroom to use is a source of great anxiety and fear for trans people. The wrong choice, according to the rules of gender conformity, can result in arrest or violence. Another little but significant thing we can do is to strive to use the pronouns and the names preferred by individual trans people. This isn't easy. I've had to work at this more than I care to admit. But a simple guideline for this is to use the names and pronouns indicated by how a trans person presents him or herself. And if it's not clear, politely ask. And this is another place where it's really helpful to remember that actually, everybody has a name and preferred pronouns, right? So it makes sense to me to try to use the names and the pronouns that people prefer to be used for them. We can also make the fellowship a place where it's okay to talk about sexuality and about gender identity. Too often in our society, these topics are consigned to porn sites and jokes. And often churches and other religious communities are like the last place you can talk about these things. An important part of any person's self-understanding is gender. Another important part is sexuality. So we ought to be able to talk about these things here, where these really are part of our spiritual journeys, figuring out who we are and how we want to be in the world. And finally, the fellowship can be a place where we celebrate the commonalities that tie all of us human beings together, and at the same time, where we celebrate the differences that make each of us unique. Doing the latter helps us move from this place of toleration to a place of acceptance and celebration. And being such a community would truly embody our belief in the inherent dignity and worth of all people. So I think our fellowship has a sacred obligation to become truly welcoming of trans people within and beyond our walls. I think we've made a good start, but we have a ways to go. This is about living our beliefs. It's about justice. It's about building a diverse community in which human beings of a variety of types and ideas and beliefs and backgrounds, where that variety enhances each one of our spiritual journeys. It is about saving lives.